Now back to Brian Buschlack's business briefing on FM News 101.
And we welcome Patrick Stone, the president and CEO of Williston Financial Group and WFG National Title, as we continue our conversation here on Business Briefing. Pat, thanks for joining us here on a Sunday afternoon. And, you know, watching the stock market continue to climb the last few weeks, S&P 500 now right around 1,400, give or take. Is this for real, or do you expect another reality check with the stock market?
Brian, I think that the stock market is a series of reality checks, and I think what we're seeing right now is the results of a series of very good news events. And if I can list them, we've had continuous drop in the unemployment rate, our unemployment filings, and I think a general acceptance that the economy is getting a little bit better. We had an FOMC. Federal Open Market Committee statement that was interpreted as being positive because it didn't reiterate the need to keep rates low into 2014. We've had a European solution, and I put solution in quotes here because really what we saw was that the Greek bond swap went through, credit defaults were triggered, but it didn't create a global financial crisis, so everybody was very elated over that. We had the results of the bank stress test here in the U.S. that was, encouraging. There were only four banks that didn't pass, and all of them seemed to be able to get, or look like they can get there relatively quickly. We've had retail sales up, and I think anybody that watches the economy understands that the U.S. consumer is the main driver of the economy. About $10 trillion of the $15 trillion economy comes from consumption. And retail sales have been steadily progressing. So you've seen a lot of things that have come along that have been very, very positive. You know, one of the things that happens in the financial market, and anybody that's watched it over time understands this, is that it is a very emotional reaction to news that drives the market up and down. It very rarely accurately reflects events in a real-time basis. It'll move back and forth. People say that markets are very efficient and markets give you a true picture, but they seem to always overrun one way or the other. Candidly, I personally think that, you know, we still have a long ways to go before we get to an economic condition that's desirable and sustainable. I base that on the fact that capacity utilization is still stuck in the 78% range, unemployment still 8.3%, consumer sentiment still is not improving, expectations are improving, but the measurement of current status is not. So I think it's I think maybe the market might be a little bit ahead of itself. We'll see. We've certainly seen rates pop up as money's moved back into equities. My gut is that we'll see a little adjustment here. I think overall things are progressing in a positive manner, but we're not going to solve the issue overnight. And the euphoria this week in the financial markets was like, oh, it's all over. We're back to normal. We're not.
Okay, that's what I was wondering, because it's been so bad for so long that you get a little bit of optimism and everybody thinks, oh, okay, it's all over now, it's back to normal. You're saying not the case.
Yeah, Brian, we still have a tremendous amount of debt overhanging our economy, and the consumer is deleveraging. The consumer is getting, whether they're refinancing at lower rates, they're lowering their revolving credit. The consumers are doing some good things, although I should take that last statement back. Consumers have started using their credit cards again. But I think overall the consumers are deleveraging. We are deleveraging as an economy, but it's going to take a while. You know, we still have $50 trillion worth of credit market debt.
You know, you're well-read than I am, Patrick Stone, but I know you keep tabs on Bloomberg. And Robert Shiller wrote a four-part series on Bloomberg I found very interesting. This was about a week ago. Very macro historic perspective of the U.S. economy, for better or for worse, haves and have-nots. We've endured this type of period of class warfare in our history many different times. I think back to the late 1800s. You name it. We've gone through this before. My question to you is, and this is a tough question, is this different this time? Are we going to get through this, or is this country so far down the road of loopholes for the rich and social handouts for the poor that we can't turn this around?
Well, Brian, there's really a couple comments here that I would make. One, I've had the pleasure of being on a panel with Robert Shiller. He is an absolutely brilliant economist.
Yes.
He is not a socialist, or a sociologist, excuse me. And I read that article also, and I thought he crossed the line into opining on sociological movements and also on a historical perspective that I don't think he's qualified to offer. I found the article interesting but not particularly illuminating, and I'll tell you why. If you break down the numbers, we've had a constant war in this country between the top 1% and the average income earner. We've also had a constant concentration of wealth in the hands of a few. If you go back to revolutionary times, it's estimated, there's no data to prove it, but it's estimated that approximately 60% of all wealth was in the top 1% of the population. If you look at it in 1980, it was assumed that about 33 or 34% of all the wealth was in the top 1%. In 2007, it was still roughly 34% of all the wealth was in the top 1%. So wealth has always been very, very concentrated. What seems to change and what seems to precipitate these periods of awareness and concern is the amount of income that's concentrated in the top 1%. And we've seen a couple times since records have been kept accurately where income has been concentrated in the top 1% to an alarming degree. One was right before the crash in 1929 when about 23.5% of all income was in the top 1%. The next time that we got to 23.5% was right before the crash in 2007.
Mm-hmm.
So every time the financial markets become frothy, there seems to be a real disproportionate amount of income going into the top 1%. And there's another way of looking at that. If you go back to 1980, people in financial services and the average American, their income was roughly the same, in the high 40,000s, roughly a little under 50,000. You go forward from 1980 to 2007, financial services people made an average of $102,000, while everybody else made an average of about $58,000. So as financial markets become, I don't want to use the word less regulated, but let's say more vibrant and more loosely controlled or more aggressive or adventurous or however you want to put it, you seem to get more wealth concentrated in the people that are actually involved in the financial markets and less so in the people making a living in industry or services. So we've had this tug of war between the top 1% and everyone else in income. We've had that a few times. Wealth doesn't seem to change that much, but income seems to. So, the other part of your question is really a political question. Do we have the political will to adjust our deficit? Do we have the political will to cut programs back to the point where we can sustain them? I don't think it's a matter of making I wouldn't characterize it so much as a matter of being a welfare state or necessarily, it's good or bad whether or not we have social safety nets. I think it's more a matter of can we adjust to the point where we sustain the social programs. We've had a general progressive movement towards a society that has viable and meaningful safety nets for the entire citizenry. Unfortunately, we get ahead of ourselves, and we've done that before. We're doing it right now. We have retirement programs that we can't fund. We've got social programs we can't fund. So do we have the political will to correct that? I hope so. Do we have the political will to redo the tax code so it's more equitable? I certainly hope so.
1 minute left, Pat, and I thank you for summing that up because you did a very fine job of it. I think you're right. It is a very political question here that will have to be answered. But real quick, before we hit the break here, you mentioned these strong job reports, and is this sustainable? Do you think it's going to continue?
Well, yes, I do. I think, you get it into perspective, Brian. We're still talking about an unemployment rate of 8.3% nationally. So, yeah, the amount of people filing unemployment has progressively declined, but so has the number of people dropping out of the job market. So it is not all, it's not all good news. Can it be sustained? Yes. Do I think we're going to have a rapid decrease in unemployment? No, I don't. I think it's going to take a few years to get it back under 7%. Interestingly enough, Oregon, for the first time that I can remember, I shouldn't say that. For at least the 7-8 years, Oregon actually has a lower unemployment rate than the entire U.S., which is very, very encouraging for us here in the Portland area.
Yeah, it sure is. When we come back, more with Patrick Stone, the president and CEO of Williston Financial Group and WFG National Title. We'll talk about mortgage rates. Which direction are they headed? That's up next.